Really, I just needed to heal myself. I felt this urge to master things. I didn't ever think I was going to get anywhere near that. I just thought I needed to heal myself. Now it's turned and I feel called to help people. So all this like pain and all of these woundings and everything have now become like my superpower.
Through the mud, the crashing world came marching into play. The sacred heart, the sacred stain, the queen has fallen so free.
Hello, everybody. This is Chuck from Above the Basement Boston Music and Conversation. We are no longer surprised that our guests are so much more than just musicians. Janae Halstead is a great example. In addition to being a singer-songwriter, Janae is also a learner and teacher and recently started a new project called The Inner Song, where she is a holistic vocal and self-expression coach, spiritual teacher, and energy healer. In her own journey through music, training, and self-discovery, Janae now shares how people can safely and authentically discover their own true voice and power of expression. She has a beautiful singing voice made all the more special by her songwriting skills. You only need to hear her sing to understand why Jed Gottlieb of the Boston Herald called her a tremendous voice in an otherworldly, shadowy soundscape. She also has her own podcast that she hosts with musician Daniel Moralia called Let's Put It Off, that we sincerely hope is resurrected, as I am sure you will all agree, we need more great podcasts in the world. So here is our conversation with Janae Halstead, recorded at Woods Hill Table in Concord, Massachusetts. You can move the mic anywhere you want to.
Okay, 2 inches or...
I'm usually like about
like
this.
These are nice. You have like pop screens and everything.
I know. Well, Ron Spitz, I was listening to your podcast. Ron, you know she has a podcast. It's called Let's
Put
It Off.
I got to hear it
now.
Yeah.
Let's Put It Off.
And it sounds really good.
Thanks.
I mean the sound of it.
Yeah, well,
so you must have some good mics there. Oh,
well,
are you in a studio when you did that?
No. That's just us with like crappy shores, and then.
Oh, really? It sounds really good.
Well, the early ones, Tom Bianchi mastered in Pro Tools.
This is done in Pro Tools,
yeah.
but the mics
yeah.
really make.
No way! So you have your own pod, and you were saying
I had it.
Yeah, you did it for a while.
And then we stopped and took a break, and then which it's true to the name, Let's Put It Off. So it's with Danielle Moralia, and now I'm like being recorded, and I know, and I'm like
now you're self conscious.
Now I'm like, oh, and I won't do that thing with the table, but
we're editing as we speak.
Yeah, you could just cut this thing out. Like that's the one thing about podcasts is like we got to the point where we couldn't edit anymore. We were just like, it's so much work.
Yeah, tell me about
it's,
it.
It's insane. We were spending like. Hours and hours a week, like cutting.
I know.
Yeah. So Trump got elected and we kind of stopped. We had like two podcasts that were so bad, gut-wrenching, and I think it just took the wind out of our sails.
Oh, two episodes?
Yeah, we had two episodes right after the election, and I think it just like, we were just like, I can't do this anymore.
Yeah, we know the feeling. We were kind of the same way when that happened. But you know, honestly, did you get to listen to her podcast at all?
I just heard your music.
I had a podcast.
I had no idea.
It's very, it's kind of similar to us.
We swear a lot.
Yeah, and they don't edit. As much as we do. Mm-hmm. Like, I just edit the crap out of it.
Yep.
But I really liked it. You guys got a great rapport. And
thanks.
It's funny. And yeah, I really liked it.
So maybe this is just a hiatus is what you wanted.
We were planning on getting back together and doing it again this fall.
Yes, I was trying to talk you into it.
Oh, you were?
Well, I don't know. I don't know if you want to listen.
Okay. You were doing... So we'll see
but
how
you've talked to several people we talked to. I wrote them down here. She's talked Chris Trapper.
Oh, Chris. Yeah.
He's
Chris,
awesome.
Will Daly, Susan Cataneo, uh-huh. Jen Kearney, Ryan yeah. Montbleu, Ruby Rose
oh,
Fox.
Oh, so you have guests. They come on.
Yeah.
It's
just like this, but much better.
My well, mind no, is because blown you guys right do. You spread your wings. You've got all sorts of guests. You've got people that do everything.
We try to mix it up a little mm-hmm. bit. But and you also do a lot of just you and Danielle just kind of. Yeah. Shooting the breeze.
She's like the funniest.
Which we wanted to do, too.
Yeah, yeah.
We just don't get to do it.
You don't apparently say anything.
No.
What's going on there?
I don't.
Are you just like...
are you kidding?
You're just holding
I'm just here to... I just spit a lot on this thing.
Yeah.
That's what these are for.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, you got them. Use them.
That's right. These were expensive, you know? Too. These suckers are expensive.
Oh, man. This is like, some nice equipment.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
Well, luckily for podcasting, this is really the only thing you have to buy.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's this monthly. What did you use? Lipson?
Mm-hmm. Danielle pays for it.
Yeah. It's like $20 a month, or you can do $5 a month.
I'm always like, I'll help you. And then I never end up. I'm just a bad podcast partner.
So am I.
There's always one.
There's always one.
I gotta
There's
leave.
One in the duo.
I gotta go. Is that
it's
cool?
It's bad.
But I really like it. And
There's always one.
I definitely think I've always wanted to have another podcaster on.
Podcaster, musician extraordinaire.
Yeah.
I love
thank
it.
Thank you. Yeah, it's a weird understanding what goes into making it is it's a whole thing.
And yeah,
it's
no one understands
it's a weird,
but us.
People don't, yeah.
Right.
And I think like one of the things that works for Danielle and I is that, well, one, we absolutely adore each other. We got together initially to have like a songwriting group and it was supposed to be like three or four women and it just ended up being her and I. We just ended up talking. So that's how the whole
then
concept
then you just put
of,
the mics on.
Let's put it off. Yeah. So I was like, hey, we want to do a podcast. But she is really funny. And
she's a musician
I think,
too, correct?
Amazing musician.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I collaborate with her and Lisa Bastoni, who I think you've had on.
I have not had Lisa on, but she's on
our
list.
So I do, like on December 16th, we're doing a show at the Burn, the three of us.
Right.
Yeah.
I saw that.
Yeah. You should definitely have Danielle on because she's
love to
so funny.
She's on our list now.
She's so funny. Good. And I think the other thing that works is our voices are different. So the banter's like.
You definitely have different voices.
Yeah. She's like a smoky, sexy voice.
Like
and
me.
And I'm like, yeah. I'm right. like the high, annoying.
I mean, like
him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and she's
exactly
like the
same.
Funny person and I'm like the philosopher.
We should
yeah.
have.
Yeah. We should have.
We should mix our podcasts together
yeah,
and do
let's
like
do
a.
It.
Meeting
let's call Danielle
pod.
Right now.
Okay.
Should we FaceTime?
Yeah,
like
yeah,
the,
yeah.
It'd be like the super friends of podcasts.
But we should have her, and then what we could do is we could just sort of like podcast for an hour.
Yeah.
Like we're doing now.
Right.
Yeah.
Who do you teach?
Children.
You're doing much more than that now, though, aren't you?
I'm trying to. I just launched a business called Inner Song. My secret life, besides being a songwriter, which can be secret at times, being a songwriter, but my non-public life is that I am obsessed with all things healing and metaphysical and esoteric, and you're like... You're
no,
to
I'm
go.
I'm squinting
yeah,
with
yeah, yeah.
with interest.
No, he's all into that too. Don't let that dumb look
okay.
fool you.
Okay. Okay. So this
so metaphysical
just
healing. This is
healing.
Not your public life.
This was my secret life for like the last since I was 28. A lot of it seems to come more from like the Aztec and Mayan lineage. That seems to be what I'm drawn to. Really, I just needed to heal myself and had like a long life of trauma, and it just mm-hmm. was like. I felt this urge to really master things in that realm. And really, I didn't ever think I was going to get anywhere near that. I just thought I needed to heal myself. But now it's turned and I feel called to help people.
Yeah.
So all this like pain and all of these woundings and everything have now become like my superpower.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
What's the thing that you embody in the Aztec and Mayan culture that can help yourself? Is it like a sense?
It's more just the people, the work that I've studied and the people that I've studied with are from a lineage called the Curanderos.
Okay.
And so there's different sort of energetic healing. They've been passed down for like thousands of years. And the Curanderos, they were driven underground because they were persecuted. A lot of the people who were able to carry the lineage on, it was done very secretively.
Yeah.
And it was done like there was nothing written down. Some of it's what's called caught teachings. So the master teacher gives it to you through their third eye, puts it into your energetic field. So one of the things that I learned, it's called light language. So it's the sacred geometry of what the universe is based off of. Huh. Like the whole universe is based off of the five Platonic solids. And
okay.
Anyway, so that's really down the rabbit hole.
Well, you lost Chuck at Aztec.
we'll steer the ship around.
Screw you.
Yeah. You said that you didn't know much about that, and then you just like went into the whole.
Yeah, you sound well rounded.
This rabbit hole is just being dug right now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, I haven't been to South America to study. I don't want to speak about something that.
Well, we talked to David Wax.
Yeah, David's a friend of mine.
We talked about this, how he went down, he lived down there, and that's how he got into music down there with his wife. Yeah.
Yeah, David's amazing. David was one of my early writing partners.
Oh, really?
Oh, really?
Yeah, and we used to kick around Boston, and it'd be cold, and we'd be like, woo, it's so bad here. And then he left, and I didn't leave. But David's amazing. He really influenced my music.
Huh.
That kind of theme definitely ebbed into like my sound.
Yeah.
A little bit of that like Mexican folk. That's the reason why I bought the ukulele. Ah. I bought a ukulele because
there's playing a little bit of Mexican folk. We were just saying before, like I see two sides of your music and there are probably more.
Oh, tell.
But
do tell.
One is that
know.
Someone I think said like indie Americana. Like you can label it however you want.
No, I like what you called it.
Well, Mexican folk is
No, that's not the word you used. Ethereal.
Ethereal rock.
I stole that too, yes. Ethereal rock is the other part.
Okay.
But the other part, it's got the uke, it's got the organic feel.
Yeah.
But then your other side is, I even heard like a twinge of Kate Bush, and then I heard Tori Amos.
I heard a little Cowboy Junkies in there too.
Love. I struggle with all of this, and if you can even make music, it's a miracle. Yeah, I would maybe like to find a genre that I sit under, and I think indie Americana is the best thing for people to wrap their minds around with it, and it frees me up.
Yeah.
But
I don't blame you. First of all, I hate being compared to somebody.
Yeah.
Okay. And almost every musician does. And we find like a lot of the people we've talked to Old Crow Medicine Show. They hate being put into a box.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just easier for people sometimes to think of how to label people, but I get it.
Because I feel like I'm in like three camps. And it's very like I have split personalities or something. And there's one part of me that was like, gosh, you know, maybe my career starting out would have like beelined quicker to like more success if I would have stayed on the route that I was on with my first album, which was folk.
That was the River Grace.
Your first one? Folk and kind of indie bluegrass. You know, I played out. I played the stuff. I had like a bluegrass outfit. We tried to do the album as much as we could the way it was. And I just got bored.
Yeah.
You know, I was just bored.
So
and
dumb.
I was 31 when I started. I'm an independent artist.
Right.
So I'm going to do what I want to do.
It's boring to do it any other way.
As
a matter of fact,
so.
The artists that I like the most are those who do something different in every album.
And you wouldn't have known, I'm going to venture a guess that you may not have known how much you love the other side until...
The dark side?
Yeah. Like the other... until you just sort of beat to death...
The
bread and butter.
You know, I do see people that get on something and they have a sound, and like the Americana thing was very popular, and so everybody that kind of fit that thing was like, you know, being ushered forward, and then, you know, you stay in your lane and like you might actually have some success, and you wear the flannel shirt and you grow the beard or whatever. You do the look, you know. No, that's not him.
He wears a flannel usually.
His beard's not.
I do not wear a flannel.
Long,
yes, you do.
I do not wear flannel.
You wear flannels all the time.
That's a big lie. I don't even own a flannel.
I guess I'm thinking of plaid. Sorry.
Plaid's different.
I get those two mixed up.
Yeah,
I do wear
plaid. What?
There's a lot of plaid.
Like what?
A lot of plaid flannels. Flannels.
What planet are you from?
I'm originally from Earth.
Okay.
And I left for a while, but I'm back right now.
Seriously. Partially.
But I'm on your side in this one. Because I think if you try to do something that people think you're supposed to be doing, then you're totally going to fail. So I'm all for it.
Whatever
you're doing now, I'm all for it.
Thanks.
I met you. I'm trying to think when I met you.
Lizard Lounge?
No, 3 years ago.
Yeah, I went to go see somebody and you were there. And I've only heard you sing probably only once. And I think it was at Thunder Road. Maybe you went up with Susan Cataneo during her CD release. So I hadn't heard you really sing at all.
Yeah.
And I was listening to what's the latest, The Edge of the World.
Yeah.
I've been listening to that over and over again. You have such a beautiful voice.
Thank you.
Usually the people we have on there, they're not that good.
Wow.
No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. Love your voice. And there's a couple of songs that's Sophia.
Yeah, Sophia.
That's my favorite.
Yeah, thanks.
That's my favorite.
Thank
you. And Juarez.
Yeah, I'll play that tonight.
That was my Cowboy Junkie. I know.
Yeah, that's your Cowboy Junkie song.
That's the Cowboy Junkie.
Totally. That song I wrote, I bought the ukulele. I got it from the store. I went to the park. And literally out pops this song by this character. Who is this character?
That's Juarez. You know?
It's Juarez. The whole song came out in like 5 minutes.
I think it's very meditative.
Yeah, I think a lot of your stuff is.
Thanks.
There's a few of your songs that have that kind of mantra, meditative quality.
Thanks.
And that's what I was trying to, that's what I was thinking about when you were diving into that other space. Hey. Can I read a quote about you?
Sure.
With her gift for wonderfully evocative lyrical imagery, delivering with such a compelling voice, it's easy to foresee that Janae's unfettered songwriting will continue to rise like those swirling rings of smoke into the expansive sky and far beyond the edge of the world.
Very nice.
Oh, that's Nate Dow. He wrote that. He's
so
sweetie.
That's pretty good.
Man, the he used to write for the Herald. So.
Oh, really?
Nate Dow. Swirling rings of smoke into the expansive sky.
It's very ethereal.
Yeah. You know, I think that some of the best songs you hear, you actually see colors and you almost smell things.
What is that called?
Yeah, that's called synesthesia.
Synesthesia.
Very good. We've talked about that before.
Do you do that when you see music? Do you, or when you're listening?
I have. Yeah. I have before, but I'm wondering, that's where I was going, was I was wondering, is that someone's, that was their experience when they heard your music, which is awesome?
Yeah.
In addition to like your own writing and creating, do you?
It's movies for me. It's movie scenes. That's how I'll see a song. Patty Griffin's like one of my favorites, and she talked about this too. She'd get like a scene in her head and she'd get captivated by it. And then she'd have to follow it. Like Darkest Day off my first album, that's about a car robbery. And there's people that have literally thought that I went through that. It's crazy because like, the main character ends up getting shot by the cops. And I'm like, I would not be standing here singing this song if I had gone through that. You know, but
it's got a good chorus in that song. That's the one when he like pets his 45.
Yeah. Dusty Rose was another one. Well, Dusty Rose was, did you ever see the trilogy Red, White, and Blue? They were a French trilogy that came out in the mid-90s, I think. And Juliette Binoche, her husband's cheating, and she's actually the composer, and she's writing all the... He's, like, famous for his music, and it's actually her. I could be getting it actually confused with Unbearable Lightness of Being. I could be, like, marrying those two movies. His hair, he comes home, and she smells this other woman in his hair. So that's what Dusty Rose sort of came from. Because I was so caught by that. I was like, whoa, that's haunting. It's like those little things in the world that are like, they're heartbreaking.
And you can almost smell it yourself. You can, you can sense what it's like.
I see it as a scene. Mm. I see it as a film.
I had something I wanted to tell you. The story of our love. I was pretending that you never heard me. No, that night you snuck in with the smell of some other. Your hair, I knew right then.
Where are you from?
I'm from Spokane, Washington.
Oh, yeah. You came west to east and stayed here.
Yeah. I came to go to Berkeley.
And did you go?
No,
you couldn't figure
I went
it out
for
from
2 days.
Your bio.
I went for 2 days. And
it's only a little shorter than
out.
I did.
Did you go for
I went for a couple
week?
Semesters.
Oh, you went for a couple semesters.
Yeah. Or I think maybe one semester. I can't even remember. The guitar is my main instrument, but I went. I was going to go in there for, this is a long, long time ago, but I was going to go in there for a production. This is 1989.
Wow.
88. One of those things.
And
back
then
in the 80s.
What happened?
We just talked about this with Roger. You have to live it. You have to. It has to be every part of your being, or you're just going to wash out. And I did okay. I did fine, but I just knew I wasn't going to. Mm-hmm. I didn't have the drive. Mm-hmm. So I left and went to a regular academic school. And why'd you leave? Because of laptops?
Exactly. That was exactly it.
They didn't have laptops back when I was there.
I'm a Gen Xer. I was very anti-technology at that time and like couldn't even wrap my head around why you would do every assignment on a laptop.
Mm-hmm.
If you're holding that kind of energy, like technology is smart and it's intelligent and it responds to your electromagnetics. That's basically all we are is electromagnetics. And if you've got that kind of dissonance going on in your field, nothing's going to work for you.
Ron, I don't know if you know this. I used to be an actor. And one of the things that they would say is if you want to learn your lines, you write them down.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the pen to paper, not typing it out.
I know.
Because I actually did that once, and my director said, don't type it out.
Yeah.
You got to write it down.
Well, regardless.
Maybe that's why I can't finish a song. Maybe I need to get back to writing a pen on paper, because now I'm on laptop all the time.
Could be. You never know.
A lot of times in this podcast, we bring up documentaries, and I haven't done this in a long time. Chuck usually does. But I just saw one on not the Hip Replacements, the Tragically Hip. Did you see that one?
He's the guy who died a couple of years ago, the lead singer.
Gord Downie.
Right.
And they are like the most famous band in Canada.
Yeah.
I'm amazed by the Tragically Hip now. That's another story. But they showed all of his writings, this poetry, this beautiful lyrics that he would write. And they show the actual, I forgot the name, we'll have to get the name of this movie. Fascinating story. But anyway, so lyrically driven. And you can see just the inflections and everything he wrote was just very artistic in and of itself, I think.
It's becoming a lost art.
It is.
I can barely fill out a check and write words down. I don't have the practice anymore.
Well, when I'm trying to write, they don't even learn cursive in school anymore.
I know.
It's insane.
I see some writing there too.
Yeah, but I can't read it. Yeah.
Chicken scratch.
It's really terrible.
But regardless of the laptop thing and this concept, which is partly a reason, you came all the way over to the East Coast, and then was there something here that triggered more songwriting and to stay and do your craft? Or
I knew I had to come to Boston to cut my teeth.
Why Boston?
Yeah, why Boston? Because
Patty Griffin was here.
There wasn't other draw, like family, friends, other academics, whatever. It was like, there's something about Boston and music.
Well, I mean, Berkeley.
It's Berkeley, right.
So I went in and out with Berkeley. I had auditioned so many times and gotten in and then decided I couldn't afford it. I didn't really want to take out the loans because I already had an undergraduate degree.
And
they only know in history.
Okay.
Hey, Matt, that's what I got.
Yeah, it's like a useless degree. So
so is anthropology.
But stories, it's stories, you know, and I love stories. Yes. So.
Hey, that's a podcast.
Yeah.
Useless degrees.
Right.
That we
is
should
a good
interview
podcast.
People that have had useless degrees.
Well, there's a lot of those.
And spent hundreds of thousands of dollars, and we should interview what they're doing now.
That'd
be
I agree.
Too depressing.
They wouldn't be doing anything that they're doing.
They're all doing podcasts.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, so I got, the last time I applied, I got waitlisted. I was like, okay, I'm waitlisted. That gives me 6 months to move out and just check out Boston, network, and see what I think. It's good. It's perfect. So I came out here, and at the time, like when I first applied, Berkeley was just a trade school. It became a more serious four-year university where nobody was dropping out. Everybody was just staying.
Yeah.
And then with the recession, then nobody left.
Right.
I moved here and I was going out and I was having my mind just like blown by the local scene. And I was like, wow, this is crazy. And I was networking and I was like, well, maybe I could like put off my enrollment one more time. It didn't work that way anymore. You couldn't roll it out. You could get accepted and you had 2 years, I think, to decide whether or not to go. They didn't have that to defer. You couldn't even defer like a semester. Yeah. And now my best friend is the songwriting professor there and she's been there for 17 years, Susan Catania, and she's one of my writing partners. So
we know her well.
It all worked out.
The person I used to be. next to honeysuckle vines, there's a darkness living on my street. I've been bitten by the night. Oh, I've been bitten by the
night. So you got into the teaching kids, though, at some point?
I had to get out of restaurants. I'd been working in restaurants for 18 years. I got diagnosed with a thyroid disease, Hashimoto's. I was like tired all the time. It wasn't a life.
Yeah, you're on your feet all the time waiting. Were you waiting tables?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Paying
and
the
just
bills.
Just eating a lot of shit, you know?
Yeah. And that's a tough
just,
lifestyle,
like,
too.
It's tough.
With the culture of the, mm-hmm. the kitchen and
late
the
late
nights.
And, yeah.
So then you got into school stuff, teaching kids. Mm-hmm. Did you always write throughout that time?
Yeah, I mean, I've been writing since I was 25. The teaching the kids thing was really important to me. I needed to do that, and I'd wanted to do it for 5 years, and I didn't really know how. And
you're teaching singing, correct?
I was teaching everything, piano, guitar.
Oh, wow.
You know, at one point, like, I literally had more students than I could even, like, handle. My philosophy is just to have it be fun and to get children to fall in love with music, you know?
But did that bring you to this, the business that you created now? Because you started, like, when we started talking, there was something that you started.
Sort of. I was doing all the work, the metaphysical work.
On yourself?
On myself, but I was also training in all these different modalities, like I said. I was doing some of the more really esoteric stuff, and then I was doing stuff that's actually quite functional, like body talk. It's a healing modality that's sort of energetic acupuncture. So getting training in those kind of things, and you know, it was kind of like, what are you doing, Janae? You're like spending all this money, like you're getting all this training. You're like, come on. And then
that was to do for other people, to heal
other
people.
No, I was just kind of like curious. I would just do everything. Right. I just was curious. So I just take all these classes and get these certifications and like spend like, I probably would have like the coolest wardrobe on the planet, but I just spent it all and invested on my internal structure.
Well, that's great. You should.
You know? So, yeah,
you don't need clothes. You need internal structure.
Yeah, exactly.
Curiosity versus clothes.
Yeah.
Curiosity. So, I'm all for curiosity.
Yeah. So then in 2016, I went to Salt Lake City to do a graduate program in voice science, being like, well, if I'm going to teach people how to sing, I should really know what the heck I'm really onto with this thing. So I go to like the hardest program in the country and do this like accelerated program that's like 8 weeks long. And I have no idea what I'm getting into. So we're doing like physics and bio on the first day, and I'm like pulling my hair, and then like I'm in class with PhDs and speech language pathologists and opera singers. There was one other person in there that was like kind of on this weird track like me.
Did you hold your own?
I feel like I held my own.
There you
I
go.
Had to get a lot of help. I had a lot of people hold me up. They're my really good friends now.
Yeah.
It was just so cool to be in a world that wasn't my world at all.
Look, I don't know. I don't know you from Adam, but I'm very proud of you.
Thank you.
Okay, because it takes guts to do that kind of thing.
Yeah.
When you're just taking classes willy-nilly and everyone's like, oh, what's she doing now?
Yeah.
And it's, and, you know, it's good to put those voices away, and it eventually it all comes to something.
Yeah.
And now this is your something.
This is my something. So those two worlds are coming together. I'm like, how is this science and this, like, metaphysical world coming together? But they're coming together, and it's through expression, and it's through helping people find their voice.
Literally.
I'm curious, when did you make the decision, or when specifically did you make the decision to do this, to start this business?
Well, I launched on 11/11.
Okay, but wait, what is the business? Because you said find your voice. I'm on the edge of my seat.
The business is Inner Song.
Inner Song, the first thing she said.
It's a multifaceted business.
No, I know. That's what I said. Yeah. When we first started, you talked about some business.
Okay, I'll tell you who my clients are.
I want to know what this is.
Okay, so my clients are, my main focus and my passion is working with artists. I'm going to be teaching artists how to kind of overcome the wounding that I see a lot of artists have, where they're constantly comparing themselves to other people. They're always looking for validation. They're not contained. They're not content. And they're not continuous. And those are Yogi Bhajan teachings. They're miserable and they're leaky. And I was one of those people. So that's one of it. So there's going to be like a mentoring program there. And then I'm really interested in working with women that have gone through trauma. Basically, all you're doing is you're teaching and healing your past self. You know?
This is a one-on-one consultant thing.
Some of it's like will be workshops and... Yeah.
Well, the reason I asked when it happened, because you went on tour. You went to Europe last spring.
Yeah.
And I was wondering if you had some kind of... moment, something happened while you were on tour.
How'd you know that?
It's on your website. It was on your website.
Oh, I put that? Oh. Well, I've been like envisioning the business and walking around on the streets, thinking about the business for the last 7 years. And then I joined another thing that I'm very into is Kundalini yoga. So I'm in
Kundalini?
Kundalini.
Oh, Kundalini.
So I'm in this women's leadership group and they're out of LA.
Bikram is the hot one.
Yeah, not Bikram.
Well, what's
this
Kundalini?
This is totally different. Kundalini is like the weird stepsister on the left of the just the strange house on the end of the block.
Yeah.
But what happened in Europe, I was really thinking about quitting music. Just could not overcome the demons. Overcome wrestling with stage fright, not being present, and I wasn't connecting with people. You know, I'd perform and I wasn't driving this performance home that I was just not proud of, like what I was doing. I was so like caught up in being insecure on stage, and I just started Kundalini. I was like, I'm gonna do some of these practices before I go on stage and see what happens, because these are powerful. And I literally took 15 minutes to incorporate some of this stuff. And I hated playing on my own. And so to go to Europe by myself this time, not have a tour mate. I did have some guys that play with me that did do a few shows with me. But to be honest, like my best shows were the shows I did by myself. It was like a thunderbolt, like something totally locked in with me.
See, I knew it. I saw that and then you did. I'm like, I wonder if something happened on that trip to Europe. Travel can sometimes do that to you, especially if you're by yourself.
So you found out about doing the Kundalini when you did it 15 minutes before the show.
Yeah.
You actually were chill. You were okay with stage fright.
It made me present and unafraid.
Because you weren't connecting with the people.
I was too scared and in my head. It took me out of my head. It brought me into my body. And it was literally like channeling universal energy through me. Because with Kundalini yoga, one of the things that you do is you get clear about what your dharma is, your gift to the world, because you clear your subconscious brain and your thoughts, all the crap that keeps you from being this bigger person and why you're here. You know, we get so caught up in all this BS and it's all the subconscious wiring. It's mindfulness. It's a lot of mindfulness practice.
So you start doing this 15-minute thing beforehand.
Yeah.
And lightning bolt.
Yeah.
Did that lightning bolt start you on doing this new album that you're doing?
Yes.
You got the new business
venture. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So what about the music venture that you're doing?
Yeah, so I'm trying to juggle that right now and figure out how I can build the business. And I literally woke up today. I was like, I don't know if I can do both of these. I don't know if I have to like drop one, put one aside right now. And I don't want to put music aside right now.
Yeah.
It feels really important to me. So
that's always fascinating to me when it feels right.
Yeah.
But is it practically right? And then sometimes when it's practically right, the creativity's not there.
Yeah.
You gonna start recording or no?
Yeah, I'm gonna start recording. I'm working with Dave Brophy
So many good things about him.
Ruby worked with him.
I'll tell you what, something I've said in the last 7 or 8 podcasts in a row, as long as you're doing something.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what it is.
Yeah.
And that's what you're doing. And that's what you've always seemed to have done.
Yeah.
You're like, I'm just going to take a class. I'm going to do this. I'm going to go to Utah. And you're doing something.
Yeah.
And it all leads somewhere.
Yeah. I'm always
moving
forward.
It may take a while.
Yeah.
But as I said, I don't mean to repeat myself to you, but this is new to you.
Yeah.
My daughter just got into college.
Oh, awesome.
4 years of her busting her hump.
Yeah.
And there's no guarantee that she's going to get into the college of her choice.
You
just don't know it. And then there's that reward eventually. And I was very happy to see that she got this reward. That happens 10% of the time in your life where you work so hard and you know, that you get, you know. So
where
it was great
is she
to
going?
See. She's going to Ithaca.
Well, that's awesome. And I don't even know. I couldn't get into college now.
Yeah, tell me about it.
These kids are insane. They're smart. It's
But now you've made your own business. You've had a bunch of albums. You've
traveled
the world.
Yeah, but if I apply
you definitely
to college
get into college
now.
So look, at all those. You're saying, oh, I don't know why I took all these things. But now look where you are right now.
Yeah, yeah.
Your culmination of all those somethings that
you've
done. So there you go.
Thank you. That's
really going to connect with the songwriting, which is self-fulfilling thing where you're going to have these amazing experiences that are going to come into songs that you can already hear it in your songs.
I
heard it on Spotify today.
Thanks.
a lot of that going on.
You know, it's just that thing every songwriter has where they're like, I don't know if I'll ever write another song.
Yeah.
It's literally like you're just terrified. There's a part of you that's just terrified.
You know, everybody has that.
Everybody has that.
I get it. All my songs are really great, but yeah. I still get it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm kidding.
You're a songwriter?
Well, you know, I've been known to. We were in a band together. So.
Oh, you were? What band?
The Butler Frogs is the name of the band. And we have an album that we finished that is sitting on my desk. It's mastered. We just haven't put it out yet. When Ron turns, remember when Ron turns 50?
30. When I turn when 30.
You, what do you play?
Piano.
You're a piano
keys,
player.
Yeah.
We met at an open mic. As
you did? Where? What open mic?
In Concord.
Yeah.
That's how the whole
Chuck
band
Chuck and I have known each other for 8 years.
Yes. 8 wonderful years.
In blissful. Match made in heaven.
Yeah, yeah.
He's starting to repeat himself a lot.
I'm not repeating myself.
You just did.
I'm not repeating myself.
Let's hear some music.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
before that, one last question.
Yeah.
When are you playing next?
December 16th with Danielle and Lisa.
Oh, that's right.
At the
awesome.
Burren.
At the Burren, right.
You know, this could be the excuse for me to go to the Burren for the first
time.
Well,
I've actually never been there.
I've been there once. I saw Ally McGurk play there.
Yeah.
Ally?
Yep, she's a good friend of mine. And Allie used to live below. This is so funny. It's such a small world.
Well, I grew up with her dad.
Oh, you did? You grew up with Joe.
Yeah, with Joe, yeah.
It's so funny.
I've known him since I was 12.
Allie used to live above my friend Mark Littman and I, who Mark's an amazing singer-songwriter, and I've done a lot of work with him. We lived together, and Allie lived above us, and she just moved from Greece, and one morning I hear this voice coming from upstairs and I'm like, what the? Since this house like filled with singers, it's just like insane, you know?
But this was great. Thank you
for doing this.
And get going on that podcast.
Yeah.
So wait, new business.
New business.
New album.
Podcast. I have a cold.
Oh, an imminent cold.
Mm-hmm. So we'll see how I get through this.
Yeah, we'll do
whatever.
Across the San Fernando Valley, thinking I could forget my past. Drove through the nighttime under a veil of pitch black. With a trunk full of treasure and bandejos all around, I went into the cemetery and I burned one down. So don't go down to Juarez. I know you need a dollar back, but please don't go down to Juarez. Your love was the best I had. There's no such thing as the future. I watched my car burn from the interstate. My Reggie M, all aglow. Nothing left but the license plate. And I saw it all loud and clear. If you're gonna cross the border, there's no way out of here. So don't go down to war, as I know you need a dollar back, but please don't go down.
So this is called Disposable Love. I'm writing a lot about technology and this sort of disconnect that we have. This is like the commentary on that. This nightmare, I'm a disposable love. I'm a disposable love. Ooh, I'm disposable. There's no place left to go. No way to be bad. Together but all alone. No space to be had. Everyone's watching. I'm just a photoshopped hero. I'm yours, but nobody wants me. I'm a disposable love. I'm a disposable love. Upload my soul, download my pain. I'm a disposable love. Control too late to change. I'm a disposable love. Switch me off, make it go away. I'm a disposable love.
We would like to thank Janae for making it out in the torrential rain to talk with us. You can see where she is playing and hear her music at JaneeHalstead.com. That's J-E-N-E-E. And learn more about The Inner Song at theinnersong.com. Go to abovethebasement.com where you can join us on Patreon, sign up for our newsletter, listen and subscribe to our podcast, like our Facebook page, follow us on Twitter, and look at all the nice pictures we post on Instagram. We are everywhere. On behalf of Ronnie and myself, thanks for listening. Tell your friends, and remember, Boston music, like its history, is unique. How would you like to join us in creating great conversations that inspire and connect? Patreon is a membership platform that provides a way for creators like us to build relationships and provide exclusive experiences to subscribers or patrons. We have been self-financed since we got off the ground in June of 2016, but in order to continue to fully invest all we can in each episode, we need your patronage. For more information, please go to patreon.com/abovethebasement.